The Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
Live from Chicago, it's That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years, an SNL podcast. And your host, Nick DiGilio.
And welcome to That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years, an SNL podcast. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. I'm a podcaster, comedy writer, and performer, graduate of the Second City, and a Saturday Night Live expert and historian, and each week we'll look back at everything SNL. The best, the worst, the good, the bad, the classic, the forgotten. We'll talk about full seasons and full casts, behind-the-scenes stories, episodes, sketches, SNL's historical significance, and much, much more. Sometimes I'll have guests, sometimes I won't. But with every episode, I will always prove that tired cliche that you hear all the time, that show hasn't been funny in years, is absolutely wrong and absolutely not true. And boy, do we have a guest today. I am so thrilled to have a guest on episode number 62, a good friend, and I think one of the most brilliant and funniest guys in the world, and a dear, dear colleague and a pro in the radio business like nobody else. I've loved this guy for many years, and he's had a pretty amazing and varied career in the world of show business and comedy. He's a veteran broadcaster who's worked in radio for over 40 years in many cities throughout the U.S., like Minneapolis, New York, Baltimore, St. Louis, and Detroit. He's hosted every possible time slot from morning drive to overnights. He spent almost 20 years at WGN Radio in Chicago. That's where I met him. That's where our friendship and our working relationship began. The last part of his time at WGN, he was hosting the top-rated number one morning show in the city. Steve is currently the host of the best morning drive show in Chicago. That's the Steve Cochran Show, which you can hear every morning from 5:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. on WLS AM 890, the Big 89, the best morning drive show in the city. And he hosts a fantastic podcast called Live From My Office, which you can hear everywhere and every platform where you can get your podcasts. It's there. He's written for television and film. He's performed in sketch comedy groups. He's acted in such movies as Grumpy Old Men, Drop Dead Fred, and Untamed Heart. He's also an incredibly funny stand-up comedian who's been doing that art for decades. He continues to work on stages in comedy clubs and theaters everywhere. He is also a huge fan and follower of Saturday Night Live. He's actually worked a bit for him as well. And he joins us today to reminisce about his teen years watching the show, some behind-the-scenes stuff, and to talk about his favorite cast members and favorite sketches of all time. We're lucky to have a comedy veteran and a broadcast legend with us today on That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years, and I am unbelievably pleased to welcome to the podcast Mr. Steve Cochran. Steve, thanks so much for doing That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years. How you doing, my man?
Well, this is an honor, and I mean that. Thank you for having me on.
I'm thrilled. Now, look, you know, you and I have known each other for, as I said in the intro, we've known each other for many, many, many years, and we have a lot of things in common, a lot of things in common, and one of those things is a love for SNL and a love-hate relationship with SNL. So I want to start, you know, from the beginning. Now, I was 10 when it debuted. You were 14.
Yep.
When it debuted. So as a 14-year-old dude in the 70s, what does one think? Did you watch it from the very beginning? Tell me about it.
I did, and the thrill was Carlin.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know anybody else, but you knew Carlin, and I was into stand-up at that point. Obviously, I had no idea what I was talking about, but I thought, George Carlin, oh, this would be cool, because I think I had just seen him on a midnight special.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
He was just the greatest. So it was all about Carlin, and I watched Carlin, and then this weird thing sort of opened up in front of me. And I feel like I was one of about three people in my high school that actually watched it, and then it just blew up. I mean, it blew up so fast.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? And so your impression, while you were watching it, did anybody stand out a little bit in the cast? I mean, obviously, Chevy Chase got to say his name every week, and, you know, that's why he was the standout. But was there anybody that caught your eye outside of, like, the Carlin and the other music and all the weird stuff that was happening?
You know, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, Belushi jumps off the screen immediately. Gilda Radner, I think I was late to the party.
Okay.
She was great, but I don't remember anything that was fantastic, you know, early on from her, that, you know, just really stuck with you. You know, Jane, I mean, it's, everything was new, right?
Yeah.
You never seen anything like it. So I don't remember if it was on the first show, but when they started doing point counterpoint.
Yeah.
You'd never heard Jane, you ignorant slut, on TV. Right. You thought, oh my God, thank God my parents are asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of stuff like, and also now you were 14 years older than me. So there was some like, Steve, I started seeing inappropriate stuff at a very young age. You know that. My father took me to see The Exorcist, but I saw The Exorcist at 8, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah,
so, I did.
Yeah, you were ready. You could have hung with us.
So I even, you know, like my older cousins were kind of, you know, like they were kind of like unemployed losers and they did a lot of weed. So I got the weed jokes. And I know a lot of my friends were like, I understand.
It's funny you say that because you're.
Oh, okay, cool. That's 40, what I was going to ask you.
I was 4 years older than you, and I couldn't have been a bigger nerd with that stuff.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the girl I had a crush on, who called me about another boy, and I was, of course, the bitch who took, you know, who took the call and talked her through it. But she told me about smoking weed, and in my head, I'm thinking, oh my God. Now, the weirdest part about that is this is how screwed up my childhood was. I came from a family of addicts, not drugs, booze.
Yeah.
But my parents were alcoholics, and it was a very dysfunctional household. But yet somehow, and I don't know why, it just shocked me that my friends were involved in this highly illegal activity. So the weed stuff on the show, I didn't get that they were doing cocaine to stay awake and all that. But the weed stuff and the drug jokes, yeah, they landed with me, but not as hard as they did probably with you. Yeah.
As a 10-year-old, which is really says something about my psyche, I think. As we, so, and I was, you know, I was a, you know, like I watched it because I had heard about it. And again, the draw for me was Carlin, without question. So anyway, so Carlin was the draw for me. But when I started watching it, I mean, something happened. Now, you know, it's someone who's, you know, you were 4 years older than me, but at that time I was watching kind of the same stuff you were. So like sketch comedy, what we got to see of sketch comedy sucked in those days. Cause you had, except for Carol Burnett, which was still, you know, it wasn't the kind of stuff they were doing on Saturday Night Live, but you had Carol Burnett, you had Sonny and Cher, you had all these variety shows that had these terrible sketches and terrible musical numbers. And this just, when I was watching it as a 10-year-old growing up on all those variety shows with the terrible sketch comedy and the bad musical acts, I was like, wait, this is pretty cool. You know, like this is much cooler than even Carol Burnett. So what was your thoughts on that?
100%, because you didn't know what was coming up next. And I remember watching, I was watching it by myself the first time. And then for weeks after that, and you know, for years after that, obviously, but it started to be a thing where you would come home from wherever you were on Saturday night. You couldn't record it. You know, you might see it in a rerun next summer.
Right.
But you had to be home to see it. So people would cut their plans short. And when you're a high school kid and you're chasing girls or you're doing whatever, to turn around and come home, and eventually you'd go meet with friends and your friends would watch it. But I hated watching it with other people because I don't remember laughing out loud at stuff as I remember like sort of studying it.
Yeah.
And just being fascinated by it and watching these incredibly cool performances. But there was nothing like it on TV.
You know, the other thing was I think there might have been a little bit more local interest here in Chicago because of the Second City connection. And I wasn't really aware of that, but it seemed to be in the media, even in the newspapers or whatever, and on, you know, local TV, was like, oh, Second City is now being represented on this stage. So maybe that didn't hit where you were, because you were in upstate New York at the time.
Right? Yeah, right, in a small town. I mean, I was picking it up from a Syracuse, New York affiliate who was getting it from New York.
Yeah.
So it just didn't seem right that it was on TV, and that made it cool.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so what were, you know, like early on, like you said, the first episode that you watched with Carl and everything, and then you started watching it. So who emerged? What were the things that you remember from the early days that stand out?
Well, the early bits, the stuff that jumped out were pretty much any time that Belushi was on, he just grabbed it. And can you think of any other fat guy who doesn't smile? And it's not like he was gigantic. He wasn't Candy or any of the big guys, but he was a fat guy by TV standards.
Yeah.
So a fat guy who didn't smile, who just jumped off the screen. I don't even know why it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It's he had something. I mean, we know that now, you know, but like, And he was the, you know, like when I was watching that show, when I first started watching it, the guys that I gravitated, I loved Belushi, of course. But for me, I don't know what it was, but Aykroyd was the guy that really, really got me. And I loved Belushi, obviously, and he became a hero of mine. But for some reason on SNL, and I've never really liked Aykroyd outside of SNL. Isn't that weird? I mean,
I get that.
I don't even like Ghostbusters. I don't like a lot, like 80% of the stuff that he's done outside of Saturday Night Live. I really don't care, and I actively dislike him now, but man, he kicked ass on SNL.
Oh, there's no question. And when he would do a Bag of Glass, when it was Jane, you ignorant slut.
Yeah.
What was the name of his consumer guy that he was trying to sell you the stuff?
Well, Irwin Mainway was the...
Irwin Mainway, yeah.
He was the guy who sold Bag of Glass, and this is a perfectly safe item there, Miss Face, you know, or whatever.
right. So he was great at that, and I have no idea why he never went down that road with another character.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a movie with Mainway? Mainway take.
Or what was I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Male prostitute. Fred Gardner, male prostitute.
Oh, yeah. Fred Garvin.
Garvin, right. Yep. Fred Garvin.
Yeah, Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
That's right. So in the early days, you know, we were all sort of captured by it, clearly. And then as time went on and you started to, so when you started to think, you know what, I want to do some comedy. I want to be funny. What were your inspirations for you to do stand-up or to get in the world of comedy or writing? What were your inspirations?
Well, from stand-up.
Yeah.
For stand-up, Carlin, you know, was a connection, but not from SNL. There was nobody off SNL that really drove me to stand-up because I love Pryor and I love Carlin. But I don't remember, and obviously you know this, and most people don't know the difference between improv and stand-up, but they're very different things.
Entirely
completely
different
worlds.
Yeah, entirely different.
But the stand-ups that came through there just didn't really stand out. And you tell me, I mean, who were the best stand-ups that turned into regulars on the show? I mean, Eddie Murphy was really more of this unpolished gem before he even was I know he was doing stand-up from 15, I can't think of any stand-ups that jumped.
He was a kid, though, Steve. I mean, like, literally. Like a kid.
Yeah, his mom was taking him to do stand-up at 15, 16 years old.
Isn't that incredible? I'm trying to think of, like, stand-ups who... Well, I mean, like, in the current cast, like, Michael Longfellow is really pretty strong on the show, and he's a stand-up. But a lot... you know this. Like, if you're a stand-up and you get hired by Lorne in the past, like, I don't know, 25 years or so, you end up doing Update a lot. You know what I mean? Yeah. You take your material that you do as a stand-up and you kind of form it as an Update segment. I mean, that's how Pete Davidson basically got a gig, you know? So that didn't really,
well,
that really
and
wasn't
Che,
the case
I mean,
in the
you could argue
days.
With
and
Che,
is another
right?
one. Yeah.
Yeah, because Che doesn't do character stuff on the show, and you could say, well, it's because they're tied into Update, but he's not an actor.
Yeah, he's not. You're right. But okay, so... So when you started to get into comedy and then you started watching SNL, not just as a fan, as a young, like, teenager, but when you started watching it as a person who knew comedy and what went into the writing of it, what were your thoughts on that and how did you connect with it then?
Well, at that point, again, I was probably being completely obnoxious and lecturing my friends on how bits were put together and all the things I didn't know what I was talking about. But Steve Martin, obviously, was this megastar.
Yeah.
And Steve Martin was a huge stand-up. But Steve Martin was a 70s huge stand-up. He sold out stadiums before anybody else and all those things. And he's a genius, and he was great. But none of the things he did back then hold up now. You could take Carlin's material from then and bring it into now. It still works. You could take Pryor's material and bring it into now. The people that jumped off the screen for me, Jane Curtin grew on me pretty fast. Gilda is obviously fantastic. She grew on me fairly fast. You're right about Aykroyd. Loved Aykroyd. Loved Belushi. I think I was the only person in that first year that didn't love Chevy Chase. I thought he was a dick.
Yeah, you were right on the money, and I thought he was great. But you were way ahead of the game because, as we all know, you know. I mean, I've read every book about Saturday Night Live, and I've seen every special and every behind the things. You know this. I mean, I study it. I have a podcast about it, for Christ's sake. So yeah.
Don't we sound like fun for people listening? Don't we sound like fun? Doesn't it sound like it'd be fun to watch this with us?
Oh, it's hilarious. But every account of anybody who has ever worked behind the scenes or in front of the scenes or in the production or as a writer or as a performer, the one universal thing that is consistent is that Chevy Chase was a dick and is a dick. Yeah. That's the one thing.
Yeah, and almost took the show down before it ever got off the ground.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that, that he was able to leave after a year, even though he was the breakout star,
yeah,
is Lorne, and Lorne has admitted this to many people, and he probably think I was lying, but he felt like Chevy needed to leave because there was such bad blood and bad chemistry. Because here's a guy who was he early 30s at that point? He was older than the rest of the cast.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was early 30s.
And I think he was itchy to happen, and he just, as soon as he got a taste of it, he wanted to jump. And obviously, it's hard to argue with success because, right, he goes off and he has two or three hit movies pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But he could have killed that show before it got off the ground. Now, as far as the show goes, the stuff that made me laugh I had never seen before, you know, the short films.
Yeah.
I mean, Albert Brooks. I didn't know who Albert Brooks was other than seeing him do Carson hits. And I thought his Carson hits were great, but I thought they were kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And the short films were fantastic. And it took a while, but everything kids see now on SNL, because of the smallness of that set and because of the limitations of what you can do in a week, even with this gigantic budget that they still have, you have to do it in one of, you know, a small handful of categories. You're a game show. You're in a restaurant. You're in an office setting.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't do big sweeping outdoor scenes, you know, with the exception of maybe Toons is the cat in a car.
Right. Right. That's about it. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, when did you start to, so how many, have you gone to SNL and everything and been there and seen it?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, had an opportunity to submit a writing packet. And in back in the late '80s, actually late '80s, early '90s, and talked to them briefly about, you know, maybe exploring that. And in the process of that, got to come in for pitch day. I was in the room in Lauren's office in that tiny room where everybody's shooting ideas around the host. And I think they still do it the same way. The host would come in and sit. They'd have dinner with Lauren, come back, and then would sit kind of next to Lauren. Lauren be at the desk and the host would sit in a chair and everybody go around the room and pitch. And anybody that's nerdy enough to follow this stuff, you've heard about this poisonous atmosphere where it's like the worst cast system possible, K-C-A-S-T-E, because you have the people that have been there, done that, treating the newbies really poorly and people being afraid to pitch because they didn't know if their idea would bomb. And it was just a bizarre, bizarre room. It was really like the worst comedy club in America.
Right.
And how they got the stuff out of there that they got out of there was amazing. But I was in there for 20, 25 minutes and, you know.
Who was in
there? It was cool. That was late 80s. It was late. Was it 88, 89? So that full cast, 88, 89. You had a little early Phil or mid Phil Hartman.
Right.
Dana was there.
Okay. So you got Dana Carvey, you got Mike Myers.
I don't remember Myers. He had to be in the room though.
Yeah.
I mean,
late
80s
would be Jan Hooks.
Yeah. Who, by the way, was hot.
Yes, she was.
And it's not one of the things I associated with her.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. This sounds like such an egomaniac thing, but I think people will get this. I was so weirded out by the vibe of the room. I wasn't so much caught up in who is in the room. And somewhere in my head, I thought they'd call on me. And I was petrified.
Hey, new guy.
Hey, it's the new guy with the big head. Let's let him pitch.
Yeah, and what people don't understand is that it is that's every week.
Yeah.
Every week they do that. That's part of that's the first part of the entire week process. Where they're up all night and, you know, in the 70s they were doing blow and even into the 80s they were staying up and drinking and people were sleeping in their offices and writing. You know, Wednesday was the big time when they would write till like 5-6 in the morning and then you'd have the read through and then you'd block and then you have a show on Saturday. And I've always thought it was amazing, you know, and someone who does comedy, Steve, you know, you walk in on a Monday, you got nothing and you got to do a live 90-minute show on Saturday.
Yeah.
And people are like, yeah, the show sucks now. And I'm like, well, it's always been that way. It's always, you know, people have rose-colored glasses. And, you know, like people are like, oh, dude, it's not as funny as it used to be. Well, no, yes, it is, because it's the same. It's the same process every week. And if everybody looks back and says, "Oh, all the stuff that Belushi and Aykroyd and all those guys did in the first season was gold," no, it wasn't.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, the first 3 or 4 or 5 years, even all the stuff in the 70s, it was gold because nobody was doing it.
Exactly.
You know, you were watching something that nobody had ever seen before. But you go back and look at some of that stuff and you go, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. How'd that get on?
And some of it was drug fueled, but there were some early pearls that came out of it for places that are still just magical now, like the 1250 spot.
Always.
The 1250 spot was there from day one.
Like,
it's like if something gets through the run and they're going, oh, maybe we keep it in, maybe we don't, they jam it there.
Yeah.
And that was some of the weirdest stuff that you either loved or, oh, you hated it.
I always have a weakness for it, you know, always. And they still do it. I mean, last week was the one where the 1250 was with that Shane Gillis guy, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, can I ask you about that? Because you and I haven't talked since that show was on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we agree on this. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think you brought it up to me that after Nate Bargatze killed on the show, that Lorne, who is closer to 80 than he is to 70, somehow must have had a conversation with somebody that said, well, we need more viral video.
Yep.
We need to be hip with the kids.
Yep.
And here's a crazy idea. What if we bring back the guy I fired because he was an anti-Semite?
Yeah.
He was so not ready.
No.
Nate Bargatze was brilliant.
He was great. Nate Bargatze was great, and this guy just could. He had no idea how to do sketch comedy, and his monologue was horrendous. And he bombed and milked the fact and worked in the fact that he was bombing. One of the great things about it, though, Steve, I posted on my socials about how bad his monologue was, like after it happened. And a lot of people who follow me and are big SNL fans, and you'll agree with this, Steve, is that if you're watching like a monologue, especially if it's a stand-up and, you know, there's somebody's out on stage and they're doing their monologue, watch the band.
Yeah. And who was the band leader for years?
G.E. Smith. G.E. Smith, yes. Yes.
G.E. Smith would always be right over the host, I guess it'd be their left shoulder.
Yep.
And you could see his face the entire time. And if he wasn't having a good time, it's going to be a long 90 minutes.
And it's the truth.
It's a great point. I never thought of it.
It's still true. It's still true. And if you watch that dude's monologue from last Saturday, stone-faced from the band. They just could not wait to throw it to commercial.
Well, the weird thing, dude, is there's a hack move that identifies you as a hack in stand-up. Now, Shane Gillis is, he's not my thing, but he's had success as a stand-up.
He has, yeah, yeah.
He's done fine. But one thing you don't do as a stand-up, if you're eating it, you don't go, gee, I thought they'd get a bigger laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just such a hack open mic night move. And I thought, oh, my God, somebody throw him a line. He's going to drown.
Exactly. And that's how everybody – and again, another guy who did that was at the Golden Globes, Joe Coy, who I actually think is a very funny guy and a very good stand-up.
Yeah,
man,
just panic
when he ate it and starts blaming the other writers. I was like, dude,
right,
come on, man,
right,
you know, like, so, all right, so some of the stuff from the 70s, you gave me a little an email here with some of your favorite things. You said you were never a Conehead guy. Now, what was it about the Coneheads that didn't appeal to you?
I don't know, man, it just did not work. As a matter of fact, I had a block against Third Rock. And I love John Lithgow, who I think is the campiest. I know you're not a huge guy, but he's the campiest, over-the-top guy, and I think he can play funny.
Yeah.
And like Jane Curtin at that point was rock solid.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. Third Rock was like, no, it's a Coneheads movie. Yeah. I don't know. I just, the language, there was a level of stupid to it that just never got me.
Now, I will say this. I loved the sketches in the 70s. Again, I was 4 years younger than you, and oh, look, he's got a big head, and they make penis jokes. That's funny. But the movie that they made in the 90s was unwatchable.
See, like, I don't even remember it.
Did
Aykroyd play it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Aykroyd, Jane Curtin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Lorraine Newman was too old, so they had Michelle Burke play the daughter. But you know, it had cameos from a whole bunch. It was awful. I mean, truly, truly awful. And it was during that time in the 90s, in the early 90s, when Lorne was like, let's make movies out of everything. Yeah, Pat. Let's do It's Pat. What the hell? You know?
Right, right.
So, but okay.
And they
never
all worked out so well.
Yeah. All right. The Wild and Crazy guys, the Festrunk brothers, you did like those guys.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't hold up. I mean, you watch it now, you go, oh, this is stupid.
Yep.
But it, back then, you never saw that on TV, and it was such a smart way to use the heat from Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And write this about these two clueless guys who just wanted to get laid.
Yep.
And could not have been less desirable and just didn't get it. It just was funny.
It was very funny. And then, of course, you know, the catchphrase, and that's another thing about SNL. You know, it started to be a thing like in the 80s, especially. It's like, if you don't have a catchphrase by week three, you're done. That's why Mike Myers had 20 of them, you know? And like, Wild and Crazy Guy.
You know, the story too about Lovitz. John Lovitz is a very, very odd guy.
Yeah.
But Lovitz, just desperate for a catchphrase, who kept trying them in the hallways, and he'd walk around and say them over and over again. And I heard this on Carvey's, in David Spade's podcast, I think. But he would just walk around at the end, he'd just go, "Get to know me." And he'd be pissed off that it never caught on.
Well, the other thing is, I remember he would do characters that were specifically seemingly designed for that. I remember he did a character, and Steve, you'll remember this probably, on Weekend Update, which was the place to do wacky characters if you wanted to do them. And he did Frenchie. It was like, "I'm Frenchie." And he just kept saying, "I'm Frenchie," like over and over again. And I'm like, dude, there are not going to be any T-shirts that say "I'm Frenchie."
Well, that's it. They should call it that, the T-shirt test.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you mentioned over the years, though, before we get back to some of your other favorite stuff and get to your five favorite sketches, over the years, who have you met? Who have you worked with that passed through those hallowed halls of Saturday Night Live? Who is cool? Who is cool? Who is a dick? Who is fun? You know,
I don't know that I ran into any dicks, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah,
but I've met a ton of them. Dana Carvey's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Spade is certainly a good guy. Will Ferrell is a good guy, but he's a big dude, and he's one of these people where you don't quite know if he's messing with you in the beginning.
Yeah,
you gotta work hard to fool me. And but I love Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell made me laugh.
Yeah,
Eddie I only met in passing. Mm-hmm. Billy Crystal is just, you know, they talk about Tom Cruise being an old movie star or that type of thing. Billy Crystal's an old comedy star. I mean, he's the bridge, you know, between the 50s and 60s guys to today, and he's still a good guy. I don't know. I've been lucky. I've met a ton of them. But the one I missed, I interviewed him, never met him in person, Phil Hartman.
Oh, man. Now, speaking of Phil, in your email, you made a special mention of Phil Hartman with a ton of stuff. I've said this many times. You know how I feel about this, and the people who listen to this podcast know I've said it several times. I think the best cast member in the history of Saturday Night Live is Phil Hartman.
Totally agree.
They called him the glue for a reason. What are your thoughts on Phil Hartman? And give me some of your favorite things that Phil did. And what do you think was so? What was it that made Phil so special to not just cast members, but to people like you and I who just, I worship the guy.
Well, coming from what we did for all those years, which is radio, you and I came up in radio at a time where you didn't have to have the big booming voice, you know, the big announcer voice. But if you came into an acting situation or a sketch comedy thing and you could do that guy, or you could have, and you had those pipes, you had another tool. And I think that's a very under-discussed thing about him, is that his voice allowed him to go places with characters that other cast members didn't have the ability to do it, but he could play Reagan, you know, as a complete bundling goofball who then really is on it and ruling the world. He could be the caveman lawyer. He was never a one beat guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And the other thing that I loved about him the most, which is why they call him the glue, you could always count on him. No matter what the sketch was, he kicked ass. He supported the other people. He made everybody else look good, and you can always rely on him to be kind of the glue, you know, and kind of the father figure. And it's odd that now that guy is Keenan. Like, he's been there so long that he's like the father figure. He's the guy that you can count on. Hey, if a sketch sucks, bring Keenan in. At least something good will happen.
But it's a different fix, right? Because you bring Phil in, Phil would make everything funnier.
Yeah.
Keenan to me has that, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's a teddy bear. He makes me happy when I see his face on my TV.
Right.
I think that's why he's the new glue.
Yeah.
It's a different skill.
It's a different dynamic though. You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, here's some of the Phil Hartman stuff. Colon Blow, one of the greatest commercials they've ever done. So funny.
You know what? And the older you get, the more you appreciate it.
Absolutely true. His Donahue, fantastic.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, you got to be, what, probably 50 or older to get why the Donahue thing was funny. But before there was Oprah, there was this guy, Phil Donahue, who did his show primarily from the Channel 9 studios. It started in, I think, Columbus, Ohio. Or maybe no, Dayton, Ohio. It started in Dayton, Ohio. It comes to Chicago, eventually goes to New York. But Oprah put Donahue out of business, but he was the guy. And the thing about the thing that Phil Hartman got immediately was the head drop in the audience when he was these physical things. It just killed me. And I didn't know anything about hosting a talk show. It was great.
Yeah. All right, how about his, I mean, particularly, like, his Clinton was great, but when Clinton went into the McDonald's, that whole thing, oh, my God, when he's eating off of everybody's plate, and it just...
right,
funny. His Sinatra, I mean, you know, I got chunks of guys like you in my stool. You know,
well,
I like
you remember how weird that concept of that album was, to take Frank Sinatra late in life and put him together with all these people who respected him but had nothing in common with him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it wasn't like the sweetness of you know, Tony Bennett singing with Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
It was Frank about to punch you in the face if he felt like you took him out of key.
Exactly. Now, you wrote down Sentimental Pawn Shop.
Sentimental Pawn Shop is funny because it's Phil had the ability to do these sketches and these characters that were actually very sweet. And he did a dance with Jan Hooks. Was it Requiem for a Dream? Or, no, that's the movie.
Yeah.
Something with Dream in the title. But Sentimental Pawn Shop was all of the things that mean most to you in life and would come in. And at the pawn shop, well, Phil would ruin it. He'd break it for you. He'd tell you what it was really worth.
It's fantastic, yeah. A couple of other things that you mentioned. You loved Christopher Guest and Billy Crystal doing that. I hate when that happens, when they're like...
Yeah,
the
I have a feeling I'm alone on that. Did you like
that?
No,
I think it's very funny. I think it's very, very funny. Yeah.
Because I think I'm right about this. I feel like they got to a point where they were... I mean, they were off the cards, and they were just making stuff up and making it worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ever jam a spike through your eye? Oh, yeah. I hate when that happens.
I hate when that happens. Yeah. No, that was, I always thought that bit was very funny. And Christopher Guest, especially Billy Crystal, went off cards a lot. Like, you can tell. I remember when they had Mr. T and Hulk Hogan were on, and he was doing his Fernando. And he kept breaking up Hulk Hogan and Mr. T, because he was screwing with their lines. Like, they had cues coming up, and he just kept messing them up, and Mr. T was losing it. I remember watching that live and knowing that Billy Crystal was specifically screwing with those guys.
Have you talked about that, by the way, on the show? Because I hear the show a lot, but I don't know that I've heard you talk about the cue card part of it.
A little bit, yeah.
Explain to people how that works. The cue cards are written and rewritten. They're written and rewritten during commercial breaks.
Yeah.
And when you see people who are not, they don't even look like they're staring at the person they're talking to in the scene.
Yeah.
It's because they're staring at the cards.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly what Shane Gillis did all every sketch. He was looking at the cards. But I mean, but sometimes they change them. Well, that's one of the most notorious and beautiful things about the card thing. It goes to one of the, you know this, is the character of Stefan that Bill Hader does. John Mulaney and he used to write that stuff together. But the reason why Hader broke all the time is because Mulaney would change the jokes and Hader would see them on the cards live. Like, he would never see these jokes.
Right.
So they would change it, you know, like that. Like, he would change it to references that were just weird. And that's why Hader would always break as Stefan, because he didn't know if Mulaney had changed the names of the references of the jokes. He did it all the time, live on the air.
Yeah, and Bill Hader's another guy, and I don't think I sent a note to you about Hader. I love Hader, but Hader more now than ever.
Yeah, he's amazing,
I don't know that he ever peaked on SNL before he got off and started chasing his own stuff.
I will tell you this, I had no idea. I mean, I loved him on SNL, but I had no idea just how deep his talent went, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As a performer, as a writer, and now as a director, he directed some of the most incredible episodes of Barry. And just like his talent is deep, like it's deep. He only tapped it on SNL for sure. Kate McKinnon is mentioned. You mentioned the Smokery Farms.
just love her, man. She just can do anything. You know what she is? She's Phil Hartman in a skirt. And don't think Phil wouldn't have worn a skirt.
Yeah. the Close Encounters bit that you mentioned where she gets abducted, that's just classic.
just the best.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin got a mention here. Always one of the best hosts ever when he's not shooting people.
And there's a guy you mentioned. Who have you talked to or worked with or come across? Alec Baldwin. I did a movie with one of the Baldwin brothers. I think it was Harpo or Zeppo. I forget which one. But Billy, or I should say Alec, is a really, really talented comedian. And I think he said it in a ton of interviews. Or a talented comic, I should say. He's not a comedian.
Yeah.
Who would have given his right arm to be a cast member, but he liked the money too much and he liked being a movie star. But his impressions are great.
Yeah.
His comedic timing was great. And mm-hmm. like you said, he was great as a host. I think he may be top three hosts of all time.
I agree.
Hard to beat him.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you specifically point out the Glengarry Glen Ross elf thing
did,
which is one of the greatest.
Great.
It's so great, but also so like niche. Like I bet half of that audience is like, what the hell are people
Right.
Like it was specifically made for people who watched Alec Baldwin's scene in Glengarry Glen Ross 8,000 times. And most of those are white dudes. You know what I mean?
Right. You had to know the rhythm of it. You had to have seen it multiple times.
Yeah.
And then put him in elf suits and put him at the North Pole.
Yep.
And that's one of those things, going back to the room, the pitch, the initial pitch and going back to the room.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where you just wonder in the room, you know, it hit with the room that night, I'm sure. But somebody in the room has to be the grown-up to go, nobody's going to get this.
Right.
And in the early days, it fell to Lorne to kind of be the cop. I don't know who plays that role anymore.
I don't know. But I think maybe if it's like, I don't get it. Then, again, Steve, 1250. You know?
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite sketches. In fact, the first episode I ever did of this podcast, Steve, the very first episode, because I wanted people to know how deep I would go sometimes. The very first episode of this podcast was dedicated entirely, 45, 50 minutes entirely, to the potato chip sketch with Will Forte and Jason Sudeikis, which is one of the weirdest sketches ever. And it kills me. Like every time I see it, that's a 1250 sketch. Like, well, I don't know what this is, and let's throw it at 1250. It's so weird.
And for people that always thought Conan was weird, Conan will always tell you that's his favorite spot.
Yeah.
The 1250 spot.
No question. And then you mentioned some Weekend Update over the years. I did a whole episode on Weekend Update and counted down my top five favorite Weekend Update anchors. And my favorite anchor of all time, I know it's kind of difficult to choose, I think, but for me, it's Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald is my favorite anchor.
100%.
Because He, I just think he was the best, and he played, you know, the Anchorman, but he kind of didn't. He was still Norm. I loved what he did. But you mentioned one of the great things that is happening on Weekend Update now and has been happening over the past few years. They do it twice a year. They do it at the end of the year, at the end of the calendar year, so like the last show of the year, and then the end of the season. And that's when Jost and Che write jokes for each other, and they have to read them for the first time. I mean, Steve, please tell me about why you think that's so goddamn funny.
It's brilliant because when you take a structured show that's dependent on timing and cues and knowledge of what you're going to do, even if it's heart attack knowledge and you're just figuring it out, and you get handed cold jokes that you know are written by your friend who's trying to get you. I mean, Colin Jost at this point knows he's going to be reading jokes about him being a racist.
Oh, completely.
But he doesn't know what's there.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely the funniest they've been.
Yeah.
And they've grown into the job. I didn't like either one of them much at first. They're not the best pair. They're not the best anchors, but they're really good. And I got to tell you, I watch those two now on the show as much as anything because I think it's been pretty uneven.
Yeah. The season's been uneven. You're right. But I'm always like, okay, at least we got Update to look forward to because I think that they do a really, really great job. And a lot of the guest spots are very funny. Like I thought Bowen Yang just this past week. I thought Bowen Yang's Truman Capote was very funny.
Now that we're talking about, I guess it is Jost, right? I mean, Jost I think is still head writer, so Jost is probably the gatekeeper now.
Yeah. Well, let's get to your top five and let's hear a little bit of what makes you laugh. So we got a tie here. You cheated on me. you're being a wuss, and you're going to do a tie. So let's do a tie. Your number five position is a tie. So let me play a little clip from it, and then we can talk a little bit about it.
Okay, got it.
Here's a little clip from your first, from number five. It's a tie, but here's the first part of it.
Chris Smith. Do you know any other words that begin with X, boys and girls? How about X? Who could that be, boys and girls?
Robinson! Are you the guy that sold my kid a head of lettuce with a dress on it?
That reminds me of another word, boys and girls, that begins with X. Escape. Well, I'll see you later. And remember, tomorrow, I'll visit you tomorrow when you sound the sleep. Goodbye, boys and girls.
Okay, so that, Mr. Robinson's neighborhood.
Eddie, at that point, you know, you're going, who is this kid? Because he was magic. And some of the laughs you hear there is because he goes to the big eyes and all the things he could do with his face. Right. But to take something as sweet and innocent as Mr. Rogers' neighborhood and do it in the hood was just brilliant. And nobody could pull it off but him.
Yeah. Great stuff. All right. Tied for fifth. This is a classic. I did an entire episode dedicated to this sketch as well, Steve. And I mean, it doesn't get much funnier than that.
You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-di-frickin-duh! We got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper.
Now, I wonder, Brian, from what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies. You're going to be doing a lot of doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river.
I mean, you know, come on.
No, it's unbelievable. And Chris Farley, you know, I don't know why I said that, because obviously Chris Farley, there's a guy who's not, doesn't have the TV look. I said Belushi, fat guy who never smiles. Yeah. Farley, Belushi didn't play the fat guy bit much. You know, the Olympic training, the little chocolate donuts thing.
Right, that was one,
But Farley always got the fat guy sketch, and he took it to a level that was way beyond, look, I'm fat, so that's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, Farley to me is still not fully appreciated for how good he is.
I was lucky enough when I was training at Second City. I was doing I did a couple of grad shows and I did some kid shows on that stage. I got to work on that stage a bunch of times. He was on the main stage when I was at Second City, and so I got to see him improvise a lot because we could get in. You know, we could just kind of sneak in the back and I got to see him do that character on stage with Tim Meadows, and Bob Odenkirk wrote that. And
Naperville Zone.
Yeah. I was there at the same time. I was studying at Second City when Farley was on the stage, and he was a rock star, man. He was just a rock star. And as soon as he got on SNL,
I only met him a handful of times, but he spent a lot of time in Chicago.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Even after SNL started, and he was a nice guy. He's a nice boy from Wisconsin.
Yep. Okay. Now, this isn't a specific sketch, Steve. This is just, I found a compilation of Norm MacDonald's jokes about OJ.
I love it.
All right. Now, before I play this, explain, well, I mean, you know, what was the consequence for Norm MacDonald doing these jokes?
Well, I mean, he got fired. He got fired and kicked off the show, and he comes back to host, but unlike Shane, he was funny. But Norm is the Weekend Update host, and OJ kills a couple of people. Yeah. Norm wasn't having any of it. He just wasn't having it. Well, the rest of the country went, well, he must have his day in court. Norm had him as a murderer from day one. And the jokes got harder and harder and harder. Meanwhile, there's a guy running the network named Don Olmeyer.
Right.
And Don Olmeyer had been in NBC forever. He was a sports guy, and he happened to be a really good friend of O.J. Simpson's. So O.J. is talking to Don Olmeyer going, hey, your guy's killing me. You got to make him stop. Yeah. So the guy running the network, not running a Saturday Night Live, but running the network, you know what he does first? He calls Lauren. He said, you're going to make Norm stop. Goes to Norm, you got to stop. What does Norm do? Sure, I won't do it again. He goes on TV and he does it again.
Yeah.
So eventually Norm starts getting the calls. Well, this built up over, I don't know exactly how long, but this is some of the greatest Saturday Night Live stuff because the cultural shift that went on with the birth of reality TV and coverage of O.J. Simpson.
Right.
Juxtaposed against Norm, the nice boy from Canada,
right,
calling it out for exactly what it was,
right,
was brilliant. And getting fired was the perfect ending.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't fire him right away because they just took him off an update. Then they canned him.
Yep.
But anyway, okay, so here it is. Now, here's, Steve, this is about 3 minutes of Norm taking him down.
And
this is spectacular. Here we go.
Hertz rental car company announced this week that it will buy 520,000 vehicles, increasing its worldwide fleet 24%. In addition, they will try to find a new spokesman who won't kill his ex-wife. This week at the O.J. Simpson trial, the infamous bloody glove was finally introduced into evidence, and O.J. didn't help his case any by blurting out, "There it is, I've been looking all over for that thing." And a new shocker in the O.J. Simpson trial. This afternoon, Judge Lance Ito dismissed yet another juror, a 45-year-old African-American male, for failing to tell the court that he had once worked for Hertz Rent-A-Car and that he had once held Nicole Brown Simpson's glasses while O.J. killed her. Dismissed Simpson juror Jeanette Harris revealed in interviews this week that the jury is torn by dissension and is already divided into two camps, those who think he is guilty and those who are really, really stupid. A bad week for the prosecution of the O.J. Simpson trial. Under intense cross-examination by defense lawyer Barry Scheck, LAPD crime expert Dennis Fung admitted that he may have contaminated the crime scene when he accidentally dropped a big bucket full of O.J.'s DNA. Our top story tonight, this week in the O.J. Simpson trial. After grisly photos of the murdered Nicole Brown Simpson were shown in court, O.J. turned his head away and wept. It was at that moment that he realized he would never be able to kill her again.
A little boo on that one.
Well,
right.
A questionable move by the defense team this week. O.J. Simpson demonstrated how to stab two people at the same time. Remember 12 Angry Men, the classic courtroom drama? Well, the first film about the O.J. Simpson case is in the works. It's entitled 9 Angry Black People, 2 Scared Asians, and a White Guy Who Hasn't Spoken Since Rosa Lopez. Testimony during the final week provided some spellbinding moments. In a brilliant move during closing arguments, Simpson attorney Johnny Cochran put on the knit cap prosecutors say O.J. wore the night he committed the murders. Although O.J. may have hurt his case when he suddenly blurted out, "Hey, hey, easy with that. That's my lucky stabbing hat."
All right, so that's
probably the favorite. That's probably my favorite.
That's why I led up to that one. That's the one that I wanted.
That's tremendous. And you know, you got to remember, because you heard some of the mixed reactions from the audience. It had to build.
Yeah.
You know, over the course of time, like you timeline that thing. Earlier on, O.J. Simpson was the guy from the Police Squad movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was the Naked Gun guy.
Yeah, Naked Gun guy.
He was
guy,
the
yeah.
great running back. He looks guilty, but something must be able to be explained here. So people weren't all ready to get in. But by the time he got the lucky stabbing hat, I think most of America was on board.
Yeah. And Norm, brilliant and just relentless. I mean, just so funny. God,
I opened for Norm a couple of times, but one time was at the House of Blues in Chicago. And House of Blues is this barn. It's just giant with these bars all over the place. Couldn't be a worse place to do stand-up because there's so many places to be distracted.
Yeah.
And Norm got caught in a snowstorm coming from Cincinnati, and he was an hour and a half late for the show. So as the opener, I was supposed to do 20 minutes. I end up doing probably close to an hour. And then I'm gassed, and I just tell him, okay, grab a drink. I'm sure Norm's going to be here any second. Norm comes in. He says, I couldn't have been nicer. He's talking to me.
Yeah.
And I'm going, hey, man, I'm going to hang out for you because you need to get out there. And he goes out. he goes out. And do you remember the terrible situation with the little pageant girl from Colorado who disappeared?
Oh, yeah.
And she ended up dying?
Yeah.
And I can't think of her name. But it was awful.
JonBenet Ramsey.
That's it.
Yeah,
JonBenet. He goes, this is his opener. Okay, he's an hour and a half late to the show. This is his opener. He goes. Yeah, you know, I was thinking on a plane, JonBenet Ramsey thing. That's something else, isn't it? He goes, you know, who I feel bad for is the kid that finished second in the pageant. Wow.
That's his opener.
He was absolutely fearless. Oh, and one of the greatest things about Norm was if you didn't laugh, he would stare at you.
Yeah.
He would just stare. And that was one of the great things about Update. He'd stare at the camera. Stare at the camera with this grin on his face. He goes, I'm going to give you another one.
I'm going to laugh. I'm going to keep doing it until you laugh. That's fantastic. You know, it reminds me of a time he was on Conan O'Brien's show and Courtney Thorne Smith was on.
Oh, yeah. Tell the story.
And he was the first guest, so he was sitting in the seat next to her. He's, you know, on the couch next to her as she's being interviewed in the top slot. And she's talking about how she's going to be in a movie with Carrot Top. And so Norm starts ripping Carrot Top apart while she's sitting there. He's like, I can't believe you're doing a movie with Carrot Top. Oh, that'll be – I know what it should be called. It should be called Box Office Poison, you know. And he's going on and on, ripping it apart, and he's like – And she's like, well, I'm in the movie. He's like, oh, no, I'll go see it because you're in it. And I'll go see it because I want to make fun of stupid Carrot Top. And he's going on and on. And then so Conan's like, just shut up, Norm. Okay, and we want to thank Courtney Thorne Smith for being here. She's in a new movie with Carrot Top and the title to be determined. And then she goes, no, it's called Chairman of the Board. He goes, okay, Chairman of the Board. And then Conan makes the mistake of saying, what are you going to do with that, Norm? And he goes, like this. Immediately, he goes, yeah, board, spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Yes, that's right. Just teed him up.
Unbelievable. Courtney Thorne Smith falls out of the chair. I mean, yeah.
She loved it.
Yeah.
She loved it.
Chairman of the board, spelled B-O-R-E-D.
And Norm is a guy who could have been doing it for another 20 years.
Oh, easy.
You know, he was 61 when he died a year ago or so.
Yeah.
And nobody knew he had cancer. He didn't tell anybody about it.
And do you know?
Man, was he funny.
Do you know, Steve? I don't know if you know this or not. You know when I got inducted to the Walk of Fame at the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he tweeted about me.
Oh, that's cool.
Like congratulations on getting
inducted. No, I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
very
I only
cool.
I interviewed him one time, very briefly, and I guess because he knew I was a fan. I guess it got back to him somehow.
Man, he must have been following you.
And I was like, what the hell? And so that was pretty amazing.
That's very cool.
Yeah, one of my favorite things. All right, next is another classic that we can talk about here because it's a classic. Let me just play a little bit of it, and then we'll talk about why it's so goddamn funny.
Yeah,
you know,
that it doesn't work for me. I got to have more cowbell.
Don't blow this for us, Gene!
Could be so selfish, Gene.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, baby, just say it.
I'm staring at rock legend Bruce Dickinson.
The cock of the walk, baby.
And if Bruce Dickinson wants more cowbell, we should probably give him more cowbell.
Say, baby.
And Bobby, you are right. I am being selfish. But the last time I checked, we don't have a whole lot of songs that feature the cowbell.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
And I'd be doing myself a disservice and every member of this band if I didn't perform the hell out of this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
All right. So, I mean, what can you say?
Well, I mean, all you can say to me is the categories that these sketches fall in, some of them are just stupid.
Yeah.
And they're perfectly stupid. Yeah. There is nothing on the page when you'd read that where you'd go, well, that's brilliant. But when you put Christopher Walken's face and Will Ferrell just blowing the thing up, yeah, you know, with a shirt that's a child shirt that yeah doesn't cover his gut, yeah, and the songs and dance, it's brilliant. It's yeah brilliant.
It is. And I love the fact that now, like, Christopher Walken is like, you know, Will Ferrell, he ruined my life. Like, this guy's won an Oscar. He's been in, like, 8 million movies, critically acclaimed stage actor, won an Oscar.
Right.
He walks down the street, cowbell! They just scream cowbell
right
at him.
That's what they yell at him. And that's what they'll yell at him till the day he dies.
Exactly. Might even be on his tombstone when he dies. All right, here's another one. This is a legendary one. Another classic. You went with a classic. And here we go.
It's been years since I've seen any balls.
Would you like to see my balls now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whip them out.
Whip them, baby. Wow, you have some beautiful balls.
They're bigger than I expected.
I know a lot of people tell me that.
Look at that, Terry, the way they glisten.
That's because I make sure that each one of my balls gets plenty of oil.
I can't help but notice, Pete, your balls are a little misshapen.
That's because I rested them on a hot stove for too long.
Can I touch your balls?
Go ahead, but be careful. They're very delicate.
Wow. I can't wait to get my mouth around this ball.
All right, so sweaty balls.
Well, and the perfection there is you take the tone of PBS yeah and public radio, and you write it perfectly where it's absolutely filthy, but there's not a thing in that sketch that's dirty, except for the fact that it is.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. That's what I mean about the juxtaposition, the stupidness of cowbell versus the brilliant writing of that.
Yeah.
That's what makes SNL great.
It does. And I mean, and also the fact that you got, you know, Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon, and Alec Baldwin doing it. I mean, that's just three of the funniest people in the world. So.
And you know what's funny is there's a couple of moments in there where I remember being pissed off when I saw it the second or third time because I thought there's unnecessary ad-libs there.
Mm-hmm.
Like at one point where I don't remember who, but one of them goes, and probably Molly, where she goes, yeah, whip them out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
no,
whip them
no,
out.
No, that was Gasteyer. Yeah.
It was Gasteyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, whip them out. Yeah. And you're going, no.
No, you don't need to do that.
No.
Yeah.
And maybe it was on the page, but I don't know. It's hard to say anything wrong about the sweaty balls.
Yeah, it's a classic. And, you know, and I love the fact that it's become a holiday tradition.
Yes, it has. Like it's a Jimmy Stewart movie.
Exactly. All right. I've got three minutes of this, and then we can talk about it afterwards. But this is one. I mean, this is a series of sketches that were brilliant pretty much every time they did them. But this one might be the standout. Here we go.
Welcome back to Celebrity Jeopardy. Before we begin the double Jeopardy round, I'd like to ask our contestants once again, please refrain from using ethnic slurs. That said, let's take a look at the scores. Sean Connery has set a new Jeopardy record with negative $230,000.
You think you're pretty smart, don't you, Trebek? What with your Dago mustache and your greasy hair?
Look, what did I just say about ethnic slurs? From third rock from the sun, French Stewart in second place with negative $17,000.
I'm a late bloomer, Alex, and in Double Jeopardy, I'm gonna bloom.
Sure you will. And finally, back again, Burt Reynolds in a commanding lead with $14.
Hey, check out the podium, look at this.
Mr. Reynolds has apparently changed his name to Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, that's right. Turd Ferguson. It's a funny name.
Great. Let's take a look at the final board. And the categories are potent potables, sharp things, movies that start with the word Jaws, a petit déjeuner. That category is about French phrases, so let's just skip it.
Hey, I speak a little French. You're an ass bite. Pardon my French.
My name's French.
Yeah, well, who gives a damn?
Moving on. Animal sounds, condiments, And finally, your ass or a hole in the ground? Mr. Reynolds, unfortunately, you're in the lead, so we'll start with you.
Yeah, I'll take the condom thing for $8,000.
That's condiments. For $400. This condiment is made from mustard seeds. French Stewart.
The answer, of course, is onions. I'll take condiments for $800, thank you.
That's not the right answer. Burt Reynolds.
That's not my name.
Okay. Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, what do you want?
You buzzed in.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, well, that's your opinion.
I hate my job.
All right, so there's...
It's so good.
And it goes on. That particular one goes on for another 4.5 minutes. It was the longest of all the Celebrity Jeopardies. And, I mean, again, Norm, you know. And, I mean, Daryl Hammond.
But here's a question for you. Can you do it without Will Ferrell?
I don't think so.
Could you do it with the current cast, or would you have to have Will come back? I don't think you can.
I don't think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And the last time they did it was when Will came back to host, and then they also did it on the 40th anniversary show. But they do Black Jeopardy now, with when Keenan comes out as the host of Black Jeopardy, and that's when that's one of the best sketches ever was when Tom Hanks played Doug, the Trump the Trump supporter on Black Jeopardy, and it turned out like, oh, we have a lot more in common. That's one of my favorite political sketches,
right?
During that whole era,
the whole nightmare that we live in.
Yeah, well, that we live in now again this year.
Yes, exactly.
So, all right, but yeah, Celebrity Jeopardy. I mean, all of them are great. Like, you know, people would come out and do, you know, like it was a chance for everybody to come out and do like impressions and stuff. But the writing was always funny, and the way that you're right, the way that Will Ferrell played Trebek. Classic, just classic.
And Daryl Hammond was never better. He was a great impressionist and had a lot of demons. And he's been the announcer on the show for,
yeah,
I don't know how many years now.
Yeah.
I'm sort of surprised they don't pop him into more sketches, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I am surprised. Maybe he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to do it. But yeah, since Pardo passed, you know, it's Don Pardo and then him as the announcer. But yeah, so Celebrity Jeopardy. Sean Connery, French Stewart, actually, you know, that was back when Jimmy Fallon was pretty funny on SNL. Now I can't stand the guy, but when he was funny on SNL.
You know, let me ask you a question, though. Fallon was famous for breaking up.
Yeah.
And Lauren hated it when it happened on Carol Burnett. That was supposedly one of the impeti of, what's one more than one impetus?
I think it is impeti-ties, yeah.
Impeti-ties. That was one of the reasons... that they wanted to do SNL so differently than Carol Burnett. And I'm a Carol Burnett Show fan as well.
Yeah.
But not breaking up constantly. Yeah. But did Jimmy Fallon ever do a sketch where he didn't laugh?
Well, when you put him and Horatio Sanz in a sketch, no.
Yeah.
But you know what's really funny is if you look at the Debbie Downer sketch, it's not their fault. They're both in it.
Yeah, it's true.
Dratch loses it. Dratch is the first one to lose it. And
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and they all end up laughing during that sketch, including Lindsay Lohan and everybody else. The only person I believe that keeps a straight face during that entire sketch is Fred Armisen. I think he's the only one that keeps a straight face.
And Fred, there's something desperately wrong with Fred, so that kind of makes sense.
Deeply wrong. Well, what are you looking forward to? I mean, what, you know, when you watch it now, who do you like? What are some of the things that stand out for
you
now?
Yeah, the new cast. I'm still, you know, putting the toe in the water. The guy that does Trump. Why am I spacing on his name?
James Austin Johnson. Yes.
Yeah, or something close to that. Anyway, he's great.
Yeah,
he's great. You know, Che and Jost are great. The new guys, the dude you mentioned from Texas that does stand up.
Yeah, I like. I'm of the cast. Michael Longfellow, I like. But of the other cast members, I think Heidi Gardner is fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
Consistently great. I think the women are very funny. I like Punky. I like Chloe. She's a great impersonator. You know, Ego Wodum is really funny. I think the women are really pretty strong.
The interesting thing is, and I could be dead wrong about this, but I think they shot a little lower than they need to when it comes to the writing on the show.
I agree.
Where, you know, I think they ought to be shooting for the 35-year-old or the 40-year-old as much as they're trying to impress 22-year-olds.
Yep.
Because 22-year-olds didn't grow up on that show like the rest of the world, and I don't know that they have the same attraction to it.
Yeah.
I think they find it if there's a clip that excites them. And then they probably still watch it as a clip. Mm-hmm. But I could be totally wrong. Kids don't go out anymore.
Yeah. I think you're right. All right. Well, Steve, what a blast, man. Playing back some stuff,
fun,
talking
man.
About your
totally
favorite
fun.
Stuff. And tell everybody where they can hear you on the radio and on your podcast, please.
Yeah, Live From My Office is the podcast, and it's wherever you get them. You can get your Live From My Office, and I hope you will. Let's see, the current episode that's up now, oddly enough, Andy Richter.
Oh, cool.
And Andy, the last three are Andy Richter, Jake Johansson, and Lewis Black. So you wow. like funny. We happen to be on a funny run here. But we do some serious stuff, too. And then every morning from 5:30 to 9, it's the last sane talk show in America.
Yes.
No matter where you listen, anywhere in the world, as a matter of fact, or on the radio in and around the Midwest, it's 89 WLS in Chicago. And, just trying to do my part to talk some sense into people.
That's right. Steve Cochran Show, weekdays.
And you're on it.
I am. I'm a regular, and thank you for letting me come on your
I love having
your
you
show. It's one of my favorite things. It's the highlight of my week when I come in, man. Just being in a professional radio studio, you know, I just like it brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah. Well, we had tons of fun, and I hope they're not over.
Well, you do a great job. So Steve Cochran Show, 5:30 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Well, thanks for this, buddy. This was a blast.
Yeah, always great. Steve, I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, take care.
All right, there you go. Steve Cochran. Always a delight to talk to Steve Cochran. Make sure you listen to him every weekday morning on WLS AM 890 in Chicago on the Steve Cochran Show. He's the best. And you're the best. Thanks for joining me today. Hey, please check out all of the podcasts. There are so many great podcasts available at the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. And check out our live streaming service 24/7 where you can hear incredible unheard music and great episodes of all the podcasts, including my other podcast, the Nick D Podcast, and this one. Every day at 9 a.m. Central, you can hear this one. And my other podcast, the Nick D Podcast, you can hear every day at 3 p.m. Central. Great podcast, great entertainment. Check out RadioMisfits.live. And my thanks to Ed Silla at Radio Misfits for doing all the great stuff. My thanks to Steve Cochran for joining us. And my thanks to you. And if you want to check out all the other SNL podcasts that I've done, there are now 61 other episodes that you should check out. They're all archived. My thanks to everybody. If you want to be a part of the podcast, please leave your contributions, your questions, anything you want to say to me about the podcast or about Saturday Night Live. That phone number is open 24/7, 773-417-6948. Please leave your voicemails. You want to email me, it's nickdpodcast@gmail.com. So my thanks to Ed, my thanks to you, and please take the time to share and rate and review this podcast everywhere. And my thanks to Jason Skaggs, my main man, who did the great opening theme that you hear every time this show starts, and this, the great closing theme of That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years. Join us next time. New episodes every Wednesday here on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. I'm Nick DiGilio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years.
And have a pleasant tomorrow.